Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Me and my shadow.
Shadow Bank.
Strolling down the avenue.
Shadow Bank, Shadow Bank, Shadow Bank.
Me and my shadow. Not a soul to tell our troubles to.
Except Ben Bernanke, as we reprise that song. Remember how the shadow banking system was supposed to be the root of all our troubles? How the securitization of ordinary loans helped bring down the ordinary economy? Well, the latest trillion-dollar bailout from the Federal Reserve seems intended to restart the shadow banking system. Economist Simon Johnson is here to explain Ben Bernanke and his shadow as we begin a three-part series with him for the month of March. Simon Johnson is a former chief economist with the International Monetary Fund. We played a clip of him talking in that regard from the This American Life special over the weekend, and he has a great blog called The Baseline Scenario, where he not only comments but also has a fabulous feature called The Financial Crisis for Beginners. And let's face it, we have about 300 million beginners in this country right now trying to figure out what has befallen us and what the masters of the financial universe have wrought. So, Simon, thanks so much for doing three parts with us on The Crisis for Beginners. Welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be back.
And listeners, we can take your calls for Simon Johnson and the securitization of debt. That's our topic for today. And the Fed's new bailout of the securitization market, known as the TALF, which sounds like a Central American rebel group, but it's actually the Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Simon, you do have a beginner's page on securitization of debt. And maybe we should begin there as we try to understand what Bernanke and the Fed are now trying to prop up. What do you mean by securitization?
Well, securitization, Brian, as you mentioned a few moments ago, is how we really fueled the mortgage boom. Individual mortgages were issued. I have a mortgage. You may have a mortgage. And then resold to other people who built them into packages. And securities, and they sold them off to various people. Sometimes these would pass through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Those institutions were central to part of the securitization. But a lot of times they would go through other issuers, such as Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, if you remember them. And they were so-called private label securitization or secure mortgage-backed securities. And these would then go out to pension funds. They'd go out to mutual money market funds of various kinds or mutual funds. And they would go all around the world, of course. So this was bypassing the banks. That's why it's called the shadow banks. The term was at least initially invented. It didn't sound quite so sinister. It doesn't sound very good now. But it was bypassing the regular banks and getting the loans made to households, getting them out into the broader set of investors without passing necessarily through the hands of at least commercial banks.
So let's linger on that concept of a shadow bank or a shadow banking system. Is it a good thing, a bad thing, a neutral thing?
I think it is a neutral thing if we just talk about it as a technical arrangement. Obviously, the way it happened in the United States, it became a bad thing. It became part of the problem. The big issue, of course, being overlending and the incentives that lenders have to really push people into inappropriate mortgages. And those incentives were very much related to the fact that they didn't have to hold the loans. They could sell the loans on to other people. They would get repackaged and they would get sold on again. And when they were sold on again, there was this illusion, I would say complete illusion, created that there was a lot of diversification, that there wasn't much risk, and that you could buy into pieces of subprime mortgages and somehow they weren't as risky as the underlying subprime mortgage.
And that
of course turned out to be completely wrong.
Now we know better. Is the shadow banking system or debt securitization new? Your website says long before they were securitizing mortgages, they were securitizing things like corn. So what's the brief history of this?
Well, it goes back to the 1980s, and it's something that people, sort of pioneers of the industry, worked on in the 80s as a way to really increase liquidity and, believe it or not, sensibly drive down costs for people who have mortgages, like me and like many of your listeners. So it was related to efforts to improve the efficiency, reduce the transaction costs, if you like, in the mortgage market. It really took off in the late 1990s. I mean, the general idea that the dot-com boom cratered, we built further pushed a housing boom. That idea is basically correct. So securitization of a size big enough to matter for the economy and big enough to worry us and to worry Ben Bernanke, that's a feature really of the last 10 years.
And how big is it? Let me read you this from the Wall Street Journal today, front page lead article, and get your reaction to it. It says, much is riding on the initiative known as TALF, for Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility. At the height of the credit boom, Wall Street issued more than $1 trillion a year of securities that were backed by consumer credit and trillions more backed by mortgages. These markets, sometimes called the shadow banking system because they operate outside traditional bank activity, accounted for roughly 40% of all consumer lending before the financial crisis erupted last year. But the market dried up last year. Issuance of securities tied to consumer loans dropped to less than $8 billion in the final 3 months of last year. Yikes. So that's $8 billion in what used to be a multi-trillion dollar market. But that 40% of all consumer lending taking place in the shadow banking system, how should we understand that number?
Well, I think it's you should understand it as an alternative to the bank. So you could either go to your bank and get a loan, or you could go to somebody else, a mortgage broker or a credit card company. Not all credit card companies operate as conventional banks, of course. And you borrow from them, and they fund that by selling the claims on you, your credit card receivables, for example, could be securitized. So it built an alternative to banks. And if you're a little bit suspicious of banks, as I think some of us are, and you think that they're kind of high-cost institutions with a lot of money invested in bricks and mortar, there's an attraction to the idea that you can fund consumer lending and, if you like, compete with the established banks through going to the securities market directly. And that, I think, is something that if we could ever figure out how to manage it properly and prevent it from becoming incredibly risky, could be okay. I mean, I think competitive pressure on big banks is a good thing. The problem is that it fed into this reckless lending across the board, not just mortgages, but also credit cards and auto loans as well.
It's really funny.
A lot of worries about.
When we bought our apartment in 2004, the closing date was actually delayed a bit because they had trouble finding who actually owned the mortgage of the seller. And I thought, well, whatever, if I had only realized that there was a big story under my nose at that time. But wasn't that amount, this 40% of debt securitization, a major cause of this collapse? And now the Fed is trying to reinflate the bubble?
Well, the cause of the collapse, it's a good question, very good question. The cause of the collapse was the reckless, irresponsible lending. So people have borrowing more than they could afford and being encouraged to borrow more than they could afford. The sort of collapse of that credit pyramid scheme, if you like. Securitization by itself, I mean, if there are people out there who are creditworthy now and who can pay back their loans and service their loans, if they want to borrow, we're actually in favor of that. I mean, this is a credit economy that's overly dependent on credit. We need to wean us off that, no doubt. But if we try and do it all at once, it's going to be very, very difficult. So the idea is, you know, let ourselves down gradually and gently. And the Fed is encouraging and wanting to support relatively high, you know, relatively safe investments. I mean, the Fed's, of course, has a fiction. They don't actually put their money's never at risk. There's no credit risk, supposedly, in their loans. I wouldn't go that far. But they're trying to encourage loans to creditworthy borrowers, at the same time hoping that the people engaged in this market are going to cut back on these irresponsible loans they were making before. But it's, you know, the level of consumer protection in this market is still woefully inadequate. Though I think there will be legislation to address that over the next year in Congress, but we're absolutely not there yet. So the whole thing is quite a big gamble.
So are you for this TALF and at the level that Bernanke is proposing it?
Well, I have to say that I am with some reluctance, and that's because, I think, you know, Ben Bernanke has the same view. I'm really worried about the banks. You see, if we thought that the banks were in relatively good shape, and we thought that banks could go out and make sensible loans, for example, loans they would hold on to on their books, then you wouldn't really want or need the securities market to come back to life. But the banks are actually in terrible shape, and we're not seeing any progress on recapitalizing and cleaning up the banks properly. I think we're completely stalled for political reasons on that part of the process. So if it isn't going to be banks that lend us so we can buy houses and cars and you know keep the credit limits we need on our credit cards, it has to be the securities market. Well, the securities market, as you said, is completely dried up. The Fed can become engaged in that market. It can basically agree to provide credit into that market. It's an extremely strange situation. We have the central bank of this country basically becoming a commercial bank and lending. Last time I saw anything like this, honestly, was right before the Soviet Union collapsed, where they had one big bank, they called it Gosbank or State Bank, that was both the central bank and all the commercial banks rolled into one. And I'm not happy that the U.S. is going in that direction. It could end very badly. But the question is, as you said, what are the alternatives?
And hopefully they'll at least make it more transparent than the shadow banking system. And after all, that's how it got its name.
Absolutely. Transparency, I think, is critical to all of this. And I think there's a lot of very sensible demands from Capitol Hill for more transparency throughout the Fed's and the Treasury's operations in this area.
Simon Johnson, my guest on WNYC, the first of three March appearances he'll be doing with us to explain aspects of the economy. He's got a very excellent blog called The Baseline Scenario that also has the financial crisis for beginners as part of it. He's former chief economist for the IMF, professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management, and senior fellow at the Peter Institute for International Economics. And Karen in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Simon Johnson. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Good. My comment is, I guess, twofold. One is that I wanted to say that I think that if we had continued to just do responsible lending instead of this risky subprime area, and also if we had stayed with the sort of traditional mortgage-backed securities structure instead of starting to get into sort of the credit default swaps and things like that, I think this whole problem probably would have never happened, and I would encourage just kind of getting back to the basics. I am actually a former securitization attorney, now unemployed. And when I started in this business in 87, we just did very plain vanilla deals. You know, the credit was good, the lending was responsible, we pooled together mortgage loans and sold interests in those pools. We didn't slice and dice them, and we didn't have these very complicated credit default swaps.
So what's your conclusion for today?
Well, I think that we probably need to have a securitization market, for two reasons. One is to bring unemployed lawyers back, but secondly, because...
no self-interest there.
No self-interest there. But secondly, because we have to start liquidity, and banks have no liquidity now. They have no exit strategy for, you know, when they originate mortgage loans, they have no place to put them, and without that, they're not going to be lending consumers.
Karen, thank you very much. So obviously, Simon, you agree with that. Here's another question for you from our website. Can your guest explain how this shadow banking system is not just a means of shifting the risk that the banks and the very wealthy might be exposed to in their drive to greater wealth onto the public and the less wealthy?
Well, that's a great question. And, of course, that is what it's become. I would stress that it's not just the shadow banks that want to shift risks in that fashion. It's also the regular banks. But the so-called socialization of losses, or the idea that the government owns the downside and Wall Street owns the upside, is a huge problem. And that needs to be addressed within securitization. And I think what Karen said a moment ago is right, that the way it was done at the beginning, where there was pooling of assets and these were relatively transparent and people were sold pieces of the pool, that is something that was reasonable. The risks were, I think, pretty transparent to the people involved in that market. And if we're going to preserve anything from the system, and I think we should preserve something, it'll be something like that, where the risks are made much more explicit. And you can't, you know, develop massive transactions or a flow of transactions that suddenly goes bad, and that disrupts and endangers the entire economy.
And here's a related question, I think, from Vic in Manhattan about this bailout. Hi, Vic.
Hi. Yes, are hedge funds and private equity covered by TALF, in other words, people like KKR and Steven Schwarzman, who made obscene amounts of money, are now protected on the downside?
Yes. So the it's not a bailout for those people in the form that, say, Citigroup or AIG or Bank of America has been getting bailouts and infusions of capital. But they can certainly participate in the TALF. They can take their borrow from the Fed using these securities. And in fact, the government took off the compensation cap or made it clear the executive compensation caps don't apply to firms participating in the TALF, presumably exactly to encourage these very well-to-do people to participate.
You were using taxpayer money to encourage hedge funds and private equity.
Yes, encourage is the right word, and subsidize is another word that springs to mind. and so what the Fed will tell you is you need to do this in order to restart the market, because these are people who have a lot of money, yes, and you want to entice them in. All right. And we're giving them essentially cheap credit. If you and I could borrow from the Fed on the kinds of terms that they can now borrow, we might be tempted to take a flutter on mortgage-backed securities or something else. But, of course, we can't. You have to be a very big investor to do that. So I wouldn't use the word bailout, but I think the word subsidize is a good word here.
So here's another wrinkle. All Things Considered did a story yesterday about banks that refuse to assume ownership of foreclosed-on homes because they don't want the hassle. This is a Cleveland homeowner who thought he had given up the home he could no longer afford to the bank, but he keeps getting ticketed for violations on the property.
I surrendered these properties back to y'all. I said, you keep leaving them in my name, I'm getting these tickets. They don't care. They're not getting a ticket. They're not getting threatened with jail.
So why wouldn't a bank take a foreclosed-on house, an asset, back?
It's a very weird situation, isn't it? I'm not sure about the details in that case. I'm not sure if it's a security. Some of these securitization deals are very complicated in terms of who owns the underlying properties or the resolution for this kind of situation. I presume that there's some need for public action and intervention and clarification of the rules here, because you really can't have this kind of situation. You are supposed to be able to default on the mortgage and lose the property. I mean, that's sort of a fundamental American right, if you like, is at this stage, is you can walk away from the house and give the keys back to the person who lent you the money, and they then get the house. I'm not aware. Maybe one of your callers can elaborate, or we can talk next week about exactly how they can refuse to take it from you if you've defaulted.
Well, let's say,
I don't think they're offering to let you off the loan.
In fact, Joe in the Bronx may have some insight on this. Joe, we have about 20 seconds for you.
Okay, yes. In the news, it showed a very odd twist, is that when banks go to court to officially foreclose on a property, the judge could ask for the original documents. And of course, since, as Simon said, the mortgages have been securitized around the world, the banks can't find the documents to use for foreclosure.
Right. They don't even know who necessarily takes, as you were saying, Simon, that that ownership. It's the opposite of not being able to find the mortgage to sell to me.
And I guess it's just a symbol of the complexity and the mess we've got ourselves into.
And now there's this new market developing and buying up the least toxic of the toxic mortgages for pennies on the dollar. Some call it penny Mac, and then reselling them. And the New York Times today says good old Countrywide Financial is one of the big money makers on this. So everybody can end this segment with a scowl, as we are running out of time. And this went so fast, Simon, so I'm glad we're going to get to do this the next 2 weeks. I appreciate your insight and your wisdom in all this. Simon Johnson, former chief economist at the IMF at the Peterson Institute at MIT, and he blogs at the Baseline Scenario.
See you next week.
Simon, do you tap?
No.
Do you TALF?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We should all TALF.
Thank you very much. Shadow.